Our guest in this segment is the author of the new book, Predicting the Markets, which is on the recommended reading list at bobbrinker.com and is available at amazon.com. It's a brand new book by economist Edward Yardeni. Edward Yardeni is president of Yardeni Research. Many of you have seen Ed on CNBC and Bloomberg discussing the economy and the markets. Ed, we thank you for your time. It is great to have you with us.
Thank you, Bob. Actually, I just came back from the beaches of Waikiki, having taken a one-week vacation after writing the book and launching it.
Well-deserved and an excellent choice, I might add. A magnificent choice, to be sure, especially at this time of the year.
Yep.
I have a copy of your book right now in my hands. I want to thank you for making sure I received a copy here in Las Vegas. And, you know, I do have to ask you firstly, and this is a magnificent work. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I do have to ask you, why did you write this book?
Well, maybe it's the 40-year itch. You know, this year marks my 40 years on Wall Street. And I guess you get to a point in your career where you kind of wish you took some time out and just kind of sat down and wrote your autobiography. And I think most people just don't have the time. In my situation, writing the book coincided with my day job. I do my morning briefing every morning, and then in the evening I'd write the parts of the book. But it was more or less the same, just a continuation of the day job. So I was very fortunate in that regard.
So many things to talk about with you, Ed, so I'm going to plow right in. Firstly, let's talk about the 800-pound parakeet over in the corner that keeps staring at us, and that is trade policy, new tariffs aimed at China. Your thoughts?
Well, I guess over the past 40 years, my view has increasingly been that notwithstanding all the negative discussions of globalization, on balance, has actually been a very positive development for the global economy. And globalization is not something that just happened uniquely in our lifetime. The reality is globalization is what happens during peace times. During war times, it's hard to trade with your friends, and you certainly don't trade with your enemies. When peace breaks out, there's a natural tendency for trade to flourish, and I think just about every economist agrees that free trade is a big positive for everybody. And this is under the assumption that you believe that the best measure of prosperity is by looking at the standard of living of consumers. And on balance, globalization really has been very good for consumers around the world, providing very good products and services at lower and lower prices. The problem is that there has been clearly a fair amount of unfair trade going on in this free trade system. Some countries trying to game it. And the administration came down pretty hard on China, and they came up with a 215-page dossier, if you will, listing all the unfair practices that China has been conducting, particularly in the realm of technology. And so I think for all the fears that this is going to lead to trade wars and this Wood-Holly tariff and the depression, I think Trump may actually save globalization from itself, because globalization always has some people that are disgruntled, and rightly so, because they've been left behind. If Trump succeeds in keeping the free trade system going but making it fair, I think it'll take some of the anxiety and angst out of globalization. That would be a positive. Globalization is definitely a positive for the stock market, but as I said, it's not necessarily a positive for everybody.
Now, there's an implication in your comments, Ed. I don't want to put words in your mouth so you can respond. There's an clear implication in your comments that China is in no position to win a trade war with the United States, and they're going to cave.
I think so. And, you know, Stephen Mnuchin, the Secretary of the Treasury, was on Fox News this morning, I believe. And he was asked, you know, you've imposed this steel and aluminum tariffs, or threatening to impose them, and you've already exempted Japan and the European Union and South Korea. So what's going on here? And Mnuchin said, well, you know, we've had ongoing negotiations with all these countries, and they basically caved in and gave us some assurances here that they'd work things out on the steel and aluminum side. And negotiations are constantly been going on, and yeah, I don't think the Chinese really want a trade war. We don't really want a trade war. I think what we're seeing here is Trump basically before our very eyes showing us the art of the deal. The way he does deals is to very publicly huff and puff and threaten, and while the negotiations are going on, and then he gets word whether, you know, his tweets and his threats have had any impact on the negotiations. So I will not be surprised if Trump succeeds in getting quite a bit of what he's looking to achieve in these ongoing trade negotiations. You know, I think Trump really wants to get away from the multilateral trading system where you sit down with 100 countries and you try to all agree on some sort of trade pact. The problem with that is it's very hard to change things. Making trade more bilateral allows you to tell the other country, look, we've got some of your companies cheating here. There's some unfair things going on. Let's sit down and renegotiate that part of it. That's actually a pretty useful way to save the free trade system from the excesses of unfair trade that inevitably will pop up in a free trade system.
Our guest is Edward Yardeni. Edward is the author of his newest book, Predicting the Markets. He's also president at Yardeni Research. And so much going on. This week, Ed, we had the first media conference hosted by the new Fed chair, Jay Powell. And yep. I thought he did a very, very good job in right. that media conference. What was your take?
Oh, absolutely. He's a very solid individual and professionally. He's got a great background for doing exactly what he's doing. I think it's actually a little refreshing to have a Fed chairman who is a lawyer rather than an economist. Janet Yellen is an economist, and Greenspan was an economist, as was Bernanke. And before that, we had Volcker, who had a background in training in economics. So having a more pragmatic person at the Fed, maybe less beholden to theories of how the world should operate, is actually a good thing. And that's actually one of the themes of my book, is that Fed policymakers, especially the macroeconomists, tend to be almost slaves to their economic theories. A classic example, of course, is what's called the Phillips curve, the so-called inverse relationship between inflation and unemployment. And the idea is that if you get unemployment too low, that's bad because it's going to bring inflation back. And, you know, they've been waiting for inflation to make a comeback, and it just hasn't. And that's, I think, because globalization, global competition is keeping a lid on inflation while, you know, bringing the unemployment rate down. By the way, it's kind of perverse to see all this tension in trade when the U.S. economy is doing so well. I mean, we're basically at full employment. I know that seems like an odd thing to say when you've got 6 million people that are still unemployed. But at the same time, we've got 6 million jobs that are unfilled. So the mismatch is what they call frictional unemployment. It's either geographic or skills-based. But, you know, you don't need me to tell you that there's help wanted signs everywhere, and it's very hard to find people to fill jobs.
Yeah, I found it amusing when Chair Powell this week coined a phrase talking about the Phillips curve. He said it was flatter than expected, right. Which is a very coy way of saying it's not really working real well.
I thought that was great. And that's exactly one of the big themes of my book, is that, maybe sometimes all you really need to do is open your eyes and have some common sense. You know, look at the data, see how the world's really working, as opposed to, you know, trying to figure out, you know, how you can stress test the torture of the data to fit your model. It's much more interesting to look at the world the way it is rather than try to posit how it should be.
Speaking of tortured data, Ed, and there's lots of that out there these days, not the least of which is the yield on the 10-year Treasury. Now, if we were to round up 100 of your favorite economists, I think in the consensus view, they would agree that a normal yield on a 10-year Treasury in the United States would be very consistent with nominal GDP growth.
Right.
And of course, if we look at nominal GDP growth today, if we add 2% targeted inflation onto, let's say, 2.5% real growth, we get 4.5%. But instead of 4.5%, we're at like 2 7/8 on the 10-year Treasury.
Right.
How do you see that anomaly?
Well, I think that's absolutely correct. And again, one of the models I use, I'm not totally against the models, I'm just totally against you know, failing to recognize when they don't work and realizing that the world just doesn't fit your model. But I do look at the 10-year bond yield, U.S. Treasury bond yield, versus the year-over-year growth in nominal GDP. And you're absolutely right. In the fourth quarter, it was up 4.4%. And yet we've got the 10-year just below 3%. I think there's several reasons for that. One is the central banks of both Japan and the Eurozone are still keeping interest rates at zero or actually slightly negative. And the bond market really has gone global. I think that's one factor. I think within the context of that model of nominal GDP, I think maybe inflation gets more weight or should get more weight than real GDP. And inflation has been remarkably subdued with central bankers wishing they could get it up to 2% and being frustrated that they can't. So I think relative to the subdued inflation environment, with the U.S. economy and the global economy clearly performing better without the need for propping up by the central banks, I would expect that the 10-year would get to 3.5%, and that would be normal. That would be consistent with what the economy is doing. And I don't think it would be bearish for the stock market. There's been a lot of angst that if the bond yield goes above 3%, that everything will just kind of fall apart in the stock market. I think that would just confirm that the U.S. economy is doing quite well. So I think we'll get through this trade fracas here maybe in a short order. Maybe that's too optimistic. But, you know, Trump's got an agenda. I mean, he made a lot of promises during the campaign. And one of the marvelous things about him, and I know not many people are fond of him or, you know, he's certainly controversial, but for a politician, or maybe he doesn't believe himself to be a politician, he's going through a checklist of everything he promised, and he's checking them off. You know, he did tax reform, and now he's working on fair trade, and he's got some other promises that he made along the way, like building a wall. I would not underestimate this our president and his ability to get a lot of these things done.
Taking your calls for Ed right now. Let's get to the busy phones. We'll go to the Talk Monster, number one rated KKOB Radio Albuquerque. Rob, you are on with Ed Yardeni. Go ahead.
Thank you, Bob. Thanks for a great show. A great lineup of guests, as always. My question for Mr. Denny today, are we headed for an inverted yield curve, and or are we already there?
Yeah, that's a very, very good question. It's a very important question. A lot of economists do give a lot of weight to the shape of the yield curve, which is the spread between short-term interest rates and long-term interest rates. It's kind of been flattening out. It hasn't turned negative. I don't think it's going to turn negative. And I do give it some weight. But it's one of many leading indicators out there. For now, I would say that until it actually turns negative, I don't think most economists are going to get that concerned about it. But we have seen the Federal Reserve raise short-term interest rates here. They did it again last week. And bond yields did go up earlier this year, but they sort of flattened out right below 3%, as we discussed before. So the bottom line is, no, we're not. We don't have an inverted yield curve, and it's not really signaling any major problems just yet at this time.
Now, Ed, if you take the Federal Reserve at their word, through the end of next year, we would have, and always this assumes continued economic growth.
Yep.
If you take them at their word, we would have between 4 and 6 additional rate hikes by the end of next year. Might be a little surprising if we only had 4. We certainly could have 5. We could possibly even have 6, depending on how the economy goes and how the inflation data comes in. Any of those scenarios would put the federal funds rate up in the vicinity of 3%.
Right.
So that would mean that the, if you're looking at the 10-year for inversion versus the federal funds rate, that would mean that the 10-year would have to go up, or we would, by definition, have an
right.
inverted yield curve. What are your thoughts?
That's correct. And I think the Fed will only be doing that if the economy is strong enough and inflation is picking up enough. And again, look how things have changed. When I said in my career we were looking at double-digit inflation rates, now we're just kind of wondering if it can get up to 2%. But that's still their target, and the 2% deflation rate, I think, does justify a federal funds rate of 2.5% to 3%. And in that scenario, I think the bond yield will go up to 3%, 3.5%. So it may remain, the yield curve may remain fairly flat, but I think the bond yield would remain above the federal funds rate.
And Ed, many economists, as you know, are musing about the fact that inflation has been as restrained as it has been. It wasn't that long ago that Federal Reserve policy like this would create inflation, and the Federal Reserve would go right after it. That has not been happening.
No.
Inflation has been extraordinarily restrained. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, when I was getting my graduate education in economics, along with other people who were getting their graduate educations several years ago, we were all taught that it was clearly obvious that inflation is everywhere and always a monetary phenomenon. And that, you know, the preacher of that was Milton Friedman. He was going around saying that, inflation at the end of the day was totally determined by monetary policy. And even today, at the beginning of every year, the Fed puts out a summary statement of their long-term goals. And they start out saying and we all know that monetary policy, you know, drives inflation in the long run. And I'm scratching my head and said, are you sure about that? I mean, just that hasn't been the case for at least the past 8 years. And my conclusion is that inflation isn't just a monetary phenomenon. It's also a function of global competition under globalization. The technology revolution has been extremely underappreciated. And I mean, it's only been recently that some Fed folks in their speeches have said, oh, and by the way, maybe Amazon has had some impact on inflation. Well, good morning. I mean, this has been going on for a while, that the technological world, the internet world, allows us to get the very best goods and services at the lowest possible prices by just shopping anywhere we want in the world. And then, of course, demographic factors have been such, I think, that baby boomers are getting older, and demographic profiles are getting older around the world. And I think older societies just aren't as inflation prone as younger ones.
Our guest, Ed Yardeni, his new book, Predicting the Markets, available at Amazon.com. It's also on the recommended reading list in the book section at BobBrinker.com. It is a good one. I recommend it. Jim is on the line in Illinois. Jim, you're on with Ed Yardeni. Go ahead.
Thank you, Bob. Dr. Yardeni, it's such a thrill to actually ask you a question, because I've wondered about this for a long time. In the past 2 years, I've spent about 3 months traveling in China, most of the time in Beijing. When I go to any retail store to buy consumer goods, you know, toothpaste or something,
right,
it's at least as expensive as American, and probably more. When I go into department stores for clothing, and particularly shoes and things like that, they are just crazy price. They are much, much higher than here.
Right.
Yet, when my Chinese friends come here, the first thing they want to do is go to the mall because they will tell me, they know the brands, they can buy the shoes, the clothes, all of the retail items far cheaper. And the first thing they do is buy a second suitcase to take things home. So I've always wondered, is this a currency issue or is this tariffs at work?
That's a really good question. Honestly, I wasn't even really aware of that. I've been to Japan and some other countries in Asia. I'm embarrassed to say I've yet to be in China because I guess my day job keeps me pretty busy, and I'm concerned that if I go to China for 1 week, I'll claim to be an expert on the place. But so your insights are fascinating to me. I know in Japan, they've got a very low inflation rate, but when you go over there, everything's so expensive. I think it's conceivable that a lot of their cheap, good products do get exported, and they don't keep much at home. And meanwhile, the standard of living has been improving rather rapidly in China. And I'm kind of puzzled by what you're observing. I don't know that it's tariffs. I mean, clothing and all these other consumer products made in China shouldn't be more expensive than they are in the United States. But it does suggest that Trump may very well, it may just be another example of how unfair trade has been, that the Chinese workers should be benefiting from cheaper goods and services from globalization. And if you're telling me that you're not seeing it, then there's something really wrong here. And it would be consistent with Trump's reading that, well, it's because trade's unfair. They're taking their well-made good products at low prices and dumping them in the United States and not sharing the benefit at home. And if they did that, their consumers would be better off, and globalization would work even better. Thank you.
Ed Yordeni, our guest, Predicting the Markets, his new book. Tom's on the line in Reno, Nevada, listening to the great KKOH Radio Reno. Tom, you're on with Ed. Go ahead.
Your best guest so far this year. Professor, it's a thrill to listen to you. I can't wait to get your book.
Thank you.
And I agree with you on almost everything, which is it's kind of unusual for myself. My question, after we've gone through the omnibus bill being passed, is what are your thoughts this is going to have? What type of effect is this going to have on the market, especially
right,
considering it's been signed by President Trump?
Great question. It's a very good question because the economy, from most indicators, is doing extremely well. Is it full employment? It's hard to get workers. And it's extremely unusual for us to cut taxes when the economy is doing this well. We usually tend to cut taxes and try to stimulate the economy when we're coming out of a recession. And here we are many years past the recession and an economy that's not booming, but it's doing quite well. And why would you want to take the risk of overheating it with a lot of stimulus? Well, there is a supply-side theory out there, a thesis that you cut taxes and that's got to be good for economic growth. And I'm sympathetic to that view. I'm a little skeptical, but we'll see. I'd like to believe that's true. And I'm a good Larry Kudlow and I are friends, and I admire his belief that lower taxes will work and stimulate things. The problem is that what we're seeing is that some of the stimulus is actually getting leaked abroad, and there's that trade deficit again. So as our economy is doing better, guess what? Our trade deficit's widening, and GDP is the measure of what we make, what we produce, and if we're consuming more of that stimulus in with foreign goods, we're not getting the full benefit of that stimulus. But that's not a bad thing. I mean, it's you want to live in a good neighborhood, and if the rest of the world is benefiting from the U.S. economy doing better, that's not necessarily a bad thing. But the thing that's really disturbing is here the Democrats and Republicans play this game of political impasse. They can't get anything done, and they're going to have to shut the government down. And then they come up with an amazing way to keep the government open. Spend a lot more money. Spend the money on what the Republicans want, spend money on what the Democrats want, and the government stays open. And the rest of us are stuck with budget deficits that continue to expand. I'm fiscally conservative. I'd like to see the country run conservative, more conservatively on the fiscal side. I mean, I don't really mind tax cuts, but I would like to see some restraint on government spending. But I'm also very empirical. I'm not into faith-based economics. I'm into fact-based economics. And the fact of the matter is, somehow or other, don't ask me how, we've been getting away with these huge deficits that have accumulated huge amounts of debts without the doomsday scenario that doomsayers have been predicting for quite some time. I will say this, if inflation ever does make a comeback, we are really going to be up the creek. Because in that scenario, bond yields would go up a lot, interest rates would go up a lot, and then the financing cost of all that debt that the government has accumulated would become a real serious problem. It would be pretty hard for us to not have problems in that kind of scenario. But for now, it's not a problem, and for now, the economy is doing well, inflation is not picking up, and I think once we get past this tariff issue, which I think we'll get through without a depression, without a calamity, I think the stock market heads higher.
Ed, do you think that there's a possibility that domestic steel producers, looking at this 25% tariff on imported steel, granted there are a number of exemptions, do you think they might be tempted to raise prices given the fact that steel imports will be less competitive in general?
Yeah, it seems like every administration tries to deal with the steel issue. I mean, the steel industry has obviously been cut back dramatically in the United States, and meanwhile it's exploded in China, and rightly so. They build a lot of things over there, whether they're building ghost cities or not, it requires steel. And so a lot of their steel production has been used at home. Here in the U.S., there's, when the oil business started to really pick up in 2013, 2014, and before, we had the big drop in oil prices, we were scrambling to get steel tubes for pipes for the oil industry, and the steel industry at home got some benefit and opened up some production. They could raise some prices, but I think the fact that the administration has already scrambled to provide exemptions to some of our key sources of steel from over abroad suggests that a lot of this is huffing and puffing to get some give on in negotiating NAFTA with Canada and Mexico, and to get the South Koreans to agree to some quotas on what they sell here. So I don't think, on balance, it's going to lead to any serious inflationary pressures in the U.S.
Ed, in conclusion, tell our listeners what you would like them to take away from your new book, Predicting the Markets.
Well, I guess one of the main themes is that, we've become so politicized in this country. But I think when you invest, it's very, very important not to let your politics get in the way of making money. Don't be a preacher. Look at things as good or bad when you invest. When you invest, think of whether what's going on is bullish or bearish. I mean, for the past 8 years, when Obama was president, conservatives probably were pretty depressed and not happy with what was going on. But if they let that get in the way of making money, they would have lost a lot of money or, missed a great opportunity. And the same thing goes with Trump. A lot of people saying that, my God, Trump's elected, the market's going to go down, and the first thing the market did is go straight up. So don't let your politics get in the way. Stay objective. Stick to the facts and be a long-term investor. The market's going to treat you right. And I really don't have a problem with bonds, but if you bought them right, for now you're going to suffer a little bit. But there will be opportunities coming up in the bond market.
Well, it's great to hear you say that, Ed, because for 32 years on this broadcast, we have recommended to our listeners to never let your political views get in the way of your investment portfolio. That is fantastic advice you just gave.
Thank you.
A lot of people have lost a lot of money by doing just that. Our guest, Edward Yardeni, his new book, Predicting the Markets, it's available at Amazon.com. It's on the books list and the recommended list at BobBrinker.com. Ed, we thank you for your time. We very much appreciate your spending time with us and taking our listener calls as well. We had great calls for you today, and we wish you continued success.
Bob, thank you very much. I really enjoyed it, and be delighted to do it again whenever you like.
Thank you, Ed.